The Guardian.
Football Weekly, back like a Russian performance coach with more in the same vein as we talk about football. Four semi-finals coming up this week, and Germany are in 50% of them as they look to conquer Poland and Russia. Old habits dying hard. Of course, they'll have to get past England to do part of that in Tuesday's big under-21 clash. We'll be previewing that, hearing generally about all the football coming our way, and looking at your posts as well in this very extended Football Weekly. That's right, listeners. Football Weekly relentlessly ploughing on into the summer. Today, we've thrown a little bit of Nick Miller into the mix.
Hello.
Hi, Nick. How have you been?
Very well. How have you been?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. As a big Forest fan, you've got some breaking news for us, which we'll be coming to very shortly after we've introduced James Horncastle.
G'day, Jimbo.
And Simon Burnton.
Hello.
Three in a row for you, Simon.
It is three in a row. Yeah, this is very much a high point.
Right. Okay, are you back on Friday?
I believe not, sadly. This is where the run comes to an end.
Really? Yeah. So this is it for the summer?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it's a streak.
Okay, well, let's make it a good one.
Yes.
Something to treasure over those long, dry months. Nick, on that note, boom, hit us with your Forest news.
Well, Forest have just appointed Johnny Method, the man who did the greatest goal celebration of all time with that. The free kick, and he just waved something in there. I pointed him to the board as a sort of...
You said free kick, and then you just kind of breathed into the microphone. What were the rest of the words?
Well, I just assumed that everyone knows which free kick I'm talking about.
I know the goal.
Yeah.
Do the celebration for us, Nick. Exactly.
Unfortunately,
really comes
there.
Across well on radio.
You may have heard the rustle of my T-shirt as I wag my finger in the air.
Yeah. Anyway, so now what's he going to be in charge of at Forest then? Goal celebrations?
It could be goal celebrations, just a sort of general goodwill, I think.
Right.
They've appointed him as a sort of nod to the club's past, I think.
Is there, dare I ask, a note of optimism creeping into your voice at the word Forest now?
A little bit, yeah. I think the problems that the new owner has in Greece might be best not to touch upon for legal reasons, so it might be a case of jumping out of the frying pan into a slightly less hot frying pan. But
right,
anything at the moment is better than the previous regime, and they've been signing players and appointing people to do jobs and so forth, which is sort of better than the last lot did. So a little bit of optimism, yes.
Yeah, well, that's good. What more can you ask? No, they're signing players and appointing people. Now. You excited about this week of football, this week of semi-final football, James Horncastle?
It's a festival of football, Jimbo. Can't wait. I mean, some of the semi-finals, particularly in the European Championships, the under-21s, are mouth-watering, no? England against Germany, Italy against Spain. I mean, if we got a Euros like that, or a World Cup like that, everyone would be happy, no?
Absolutely. Here's Lucas Cash Beast. Can Italy's under-21s cause an upset against the scintillating Spanish on Tuesday? Will Donnarumma, asked Mr. Cashbeast, be focused after the furore of the past weeks and yesterday's Twitter storm as well?
Yeah, he made himself look very foolish, or his people did. Enzo Raiola, he was Mino's cousin, who basically has been looking after Donnarumma since he was a youngster. Still is a youngster. And he flew out to Poland to spend some time with him this week, and again, this seems to be very much a kind of power play. Donnarumma, he tweeted to say, "Yesterday, tomorrow, and in the future, I am I'm with Raiola." Kind of tweet,
right?
Then Mino Raiola tweeted for the first time in a long, long time, calling themselves like a WWE tag team, which was Donna Raiola, one the haters nil. Donnarumma seemed to go rogue at this point. He went on Instagram and basically said, his head is focusing on the Euros at the moment, but when he gets back, he's going to go meet Milan with his family and talk about the contract extension. And then he said he'd been hacked, and whether he'd been hacked by the Raiolas or someone else, we don't know. But
right,
it seems that tweet, that Instagram post of his, did not go down well with his agents and their ongoing strife with Milan.
Right, okay. So Gigi Donnarumma, widely regarded as the best goalkeeping prospect in world football, suddenly telling Milan he's not going to stay with the club that he'd been busy kissing the badge of, etc., and had grown up with. And some suggestions that he is going to meet, and Raiola's said this as well, that after the Euros, which he's currently playing in Donnarumma, they will be meeting up with the club. So some glimmers of hope that he might decide to stay on with an improved cash offer. How has it been affecting his football, as Mr. Cash Beast was asking?
Well, he didn't play well against the Czechs when they lost. Basically every shot that they had at his goal went through him. He didn't really have much to do against Germany, which was a bit of a surprise. Italy needed a miracle to qualify for the semi-finals, and they got that miracle. Gigi Di Biagio saying that they're going to need another miracle to beat Spain, who they lost in the final to 4 years ago. Mm. But this is very much becoming a bit of a classic in international football. Remember the Euros last year, that great game between Italy and Spain. And then in September this coming year, it's essentially a playoff between the two senior teams to qualify for the World Cup. So this is very much the appetizer for that.
Right. And of course, the two under-21 sides actually met earlier this year, I believe, and it was a victory for the Spanish. Well, it was a 1-0 victory over Germany. The miracle bit that Italy needed was Denmark also beating the Czech Republic, which they did 4-2.
Yeah, which they didn't expect because, obviously, history. Mm. Italy having to rely on the Danes or the Swedes, it hasn't always gone their way, as they found it in Euro 2004 and, 2 years ago in this tournament when they needed Sweden to do them a favour, and they didn't.
And they didn't, so, yeah. Right. Well, we'll be hearing from Raphael Honigstein about Germany, who, despite that defeat, also go through, as we mentioned, to the semi-finals. Simon, what of these four games this week, these four big matches, which one of them most excites you?
Well, I guess both the Germany games have their interest. Mm. A lot of people have been harking back to Euro 96. There are many obvious parallels there. Kuntz against Southgate.
All right.
Germany against England, obviously in the semi-final. Kuntz, in his press conference yesterday, he mentioned also this, they kicked off their campaign against the Czech Republic, as they did in Euro 96, and they also played Italy in the group stages, as again they did in 1996. And so here we are. He's been reminding his squad about what he got up to in England all those years ago. If you were a sentient adult in 96, then you probably remember that you should have a deeply held inferiority complex concerning Germany, if you're an Englishman, obviously. Whereas the members of the under-21 squad may not.
So, that's true.
Our hope is that they start the match, not conscious of our decades-old inability to convert penalties.
That's true. They were barely alive. Particular. Yeah, in 96, if indeed they were. And Kuntz with a lovely little story, a little anecdote there about his name and its resonance with English fans, no? And his mother?
Yeah, he told his mother that. So they reworked the words of Football's Coming Home to include prominently his surname at some point towards the end of that tournament. He reassured
In the video, they all wore jerseys with his name on the back. His mother was perplexed at this and asked why there was such a reference to his name.
And he said it's because he scored that goal in the semi-final, so they were celebrating his success, rather than that his name has some unfortunate alternative kind of meanings in English.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he beseeched reporters not to tell his mum.
Right. Crikey, I hope she's not listening.
Yeah. Well, she probably is. Most people do.
That's so very true. All right. And the other Germany game, of course, sees them against Mexico, doesn't it?
It is.
That's exotic.
Well, they've been the two most entertaining teams probably in the Confederations Cup. They've certainly all of Germany's games and all of Mexico's games, both teams have scored. They've looked enterprising going forwards, but also a little dodgy in defence. And this looks like, the one that has the potential not just for either team to win, but for genuine entertainment to happen along the way. You compare it to Portugal. Portugal have kept two clean sheets. And in every single Portugal game so far, Cristiano Ronaldo has won the Man of the Match award. Hmm. And there's been a certain comparative monotony, perhaps you could say, to their progress.
Efficiency.
Efficiency. Well, we can call it efficiency.
Yeah. Let's call Raphael Honigstein right now, a man who's all over that German football business, to hear his take on what's set up to be a pretty successful summer, given that they left all the big names at home for die Mannschaft. Rafa.
Yes.
We pulled you out from under a pile of books. How's it all going?
It's okay, James.
You're writing again, aren't you?
Thank you for asking. It's not too bad.
Yeah, you're writing a book again, aren't you?
I am writing a book again.
All right.
Really done.
Okay. Excellent. Hey, while you've been doing that, Germany are doing things in both the Confederations Cup and the under-21s. We're excited because they have two semifinals coming up this week. As you know, the first of them is going to be a tea time on Tuesday when they'll be taking on Gareth Southgate's England. How excited are the Germans about that?
Reasonably excited. I think they're slightly more excited about the Confed Cup because all of Germany think that that team, Löw's team, has got a better chance of actually doing something in terms of winning the trophy. The under-21s, it's not a great side. They're missing the likes of Kimmich and Goretzka. It's a decent team, but doesn't really have sort of star performers. And I personally don't really rate Stefan Kuntz, the manager, that highly either. So I think England are favourites to go through.
Really?
Yes.
They weren't particularly impressive against Italy, although they did have an early goal slightly controversially disallowed.
Kuntz was out-coached in that game. He didn't really have a lot of answers for what Di Biagio brought to the table. So, you know, I think on the one hand, this German side does look not just kind of under 20. It seems to be the second string on the under 21 side as
right.
well.
Right. Well, is that the issue, Rafa, that the under 21s are actually off with the German senior side because they left the entire World Cup squad at home?
Yeah, I mean, at least a couple of those players would have been eligible, in Kimmich and Goretzka, and they're you know, big players. I think it's just a little bit of coincidence, you know, if you get players that are just in that bracket right now, if they're, you know, maybe just below, still with the under-19s or already with a more developed Confed Cup, which is a kind of a halfway house kind of squad between, you know, one or two established players and youngsters that otherwise wouldn't be there. So it's just not, as far as the under-21s concerned, it's just not a very inspiring kind of selection of players. There's Max Meyer, who's decent, but, you know, he's hasn't been consistent enough. He's the captain. At Schalke, he's kind of in and out of the team. They might let him go. You've got Serge Gnabry, who's had a very good season. But then you're kind of already struggling to find big players who play important roles at their clubs. They're all regulars to a certain extent, but they're not really the type of players who you think, okay, you know, they're necessarily sort of the backbone of your seniors team in years to come. They're more kind of the leftovers, I think. Mm.
Well, an underwhelming under 21 side, but one that still made its way through to the semi-finals. Let's talk about Yogi Love's side that's out in Russia, that's pretty much cruised through the group stage. One or two question marks about the goalkeeping, though, Rafa.
Yeah, I mean, Bernd Leno has had an absolute nightmare against Australia and won't feature again. Joachim Löw now has made up his mind that Mats is his acronym, but Marc-Andre ter Stegen, MATS, will be in goal for the duration of the tournament. He's had a decent game, but of course looked a little bit at fault for Cameroon's consolation goal yesterday. But by and large, I think he's a much better keeper than either Bernd Leno or Kevin Trapp. But this is, you know, this is kind of a fake or phony war because, you know, Manuel Neuer is going to be around for another 5, 6, maybe 10 years. I don't know. So you're just fighting kind of for scraps.
Right.
Okay. I think ter Stegen is decent enough.
Okay. As you say, somewhat at fault for Cameroon's lone goal in that clash, but it was a 3-1 victory for Germany, which puts them through to the game with Mexico. A brace for Timo Werner out of Red Bull Leipzig. With his exploits, will that help to soften the attitude, shall we say, of German fans towards RB?
I'm not sure. I mean, he in particular is very unpopular for a dive, a very blatant dive in the Bundesliga game. So the joke in Germany was that they asked him, they imagined somebody asked him after the game, were you not distracted because nobody booed you this time? No, I don't think the attitude towards RB will soften much. But he's a wonderful player, and if he hadn't been for that dive, and if it wasn't for the fact that he's playing for the wrong club, in inverted commas, I think people would absolutely appreciate him a lot more He scored his first couple of goals in the national team, and I think he is exactly the kind of striker that Germany have been looking for. He's a little bit different. He's not a target man, but he's not a sort of attacking midfielder that's converted. He is sort of kind of more of a last man on the shoulder kind of striker that I think, especially when it comes to counter-attacking situations, second half, somebody to change the game, Germany will do really well having him in the pocket, as it were.
Nice. I tell you who is popular from RB Leipzig, Rafa? Naby Keita.
Yeah.
Matt Puckey asking for any talk on Naby Keita. That would be great, he says. What's happening with him and his prospective move away?
Well, I mean, Naby Keita would love to go. I think, like many Leipzig players, Forsberg is another one. They feel, you know, this has been a great season, and now there's big clubs, more attractive clubs and more attractive cities asking them to come, and they want to go. But Leipzig have made it very clear that they're not selling this season. They said no to Forsberg. He's very upset. His agent has accused him of destroying his dream. I think Keita is a little bit more accommodating in that respect. And Leipzig have now said that unless Liverpool come with an 18 million euros offer, then it shouldn't bother. I mean, you can read that as a bit of leeway, but I read it more as we're going to give you such a crazy price that you're not going to call us back. I don't think that, you know, for all that he's done last season, and he's had a fantastic season, you can realistically ask for 80 million euros. I just don't think that is a price that Liverpool can or want to pay.
Fair enough. Rafa, what chapter are you on in your book now?
I'm writing now the chapter on how Liverpool snared Jürgen Klopp.
Oh, right.
Won him over.
How did they do that?
Well, you'll have to write the book, James.
All right. All right, Raf. I look forward to that. I'll get the chance to do that after September the...
Oh, it'll be in October.
Oh, October now.
Yeah, nothing's for free in this life, apart from this podcast, James.
Mexico, who'll be facing Germany, overcame Russia to reach semi-finals. A 2-1 victory. Both goals were headers. The curious thing was, neither of them was from Chicharito. How about that?
They've come back from behind in all of their games so far.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're putting the can in Mexican.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Right. They're putting the mess first of all and then the can. Yeah.
There's only two players that have managed to get themselves booked twice and suspended for the next, for the semi-final. One of them's Pepe, obviously, for Portugal, and the other one's Mexican, Andres Cuadrado. Yeah.
All right. Nick, if you were going to pick one semi-final to watch this week, which one would it be?
Well, Chile-Portugal's kind of slightly strange one, because I don't think either, from what I've seen anyway, neither side have been sort of particularly impressive. So
really?
Well, Chile in particular, they've kind of sort of stumbled through a couple of games, and Alexis scored in one of them, and so this kind of thing, you could either get a complete shambles of a game where both teams make assorted horrible mistakes, it was all very entertaining, or it could be a stodgy mess of a game. And
I'd towards the former, particularly since Claudio Bravo is now back in the mix for the goalkeeping jersey for Chile. And having said that, Portugal, I think, have been looking pretty good. I know it was only New Zealand, but they looked very tasty against the Kiwis.
Claudio Bravo getting back into the swing of things. He more or less gave away a goal yesterday, passed to a player who had fired a pass at a player about thigh height when he had two players closing him down.
Yeah,
it was good work.
It was curious to see Germany making a similar error in the game. It was Saturday against Italy. No,
I mean, I know Rafa said there aren't that many good prospects in this Germany side, but in addition to Naby, there was Dahoud, and Dahoud was the one who gave the ball away. Dahoud has just moved to Borussia Dortmund, but indicative of this aggressive high press that Italy are playing, which led all those three players up front for them to get booked. But
that was the exciting bit. After that, it kind of died away a bit, that game, I thought.
It did. I think Germany, let's just say, when Jung came on, they were quite happy knowing what was going on in the Denmark game, because I think they knew that if they actually had a go and maybe got a point or won that game, they'd have to play Spain rather than England in the semi-finals. So, yeah.
Interesting. All right, well, those are the matches. As I say, Tuesday it all begins with Italy-Germany, and then boom, after that you've got Spain-Italy, then Wednesday, Portugal-Chile, Nick, and your Germany-Mexico thing, which does sound exciting, Simon, will be up on the Thursday.
Chile are playing their like fourth major tournament in a row. Like they haven't had a summer off.
So they had the Copa Centenario.
They obviously had the World Cup, the Copa, the Copa Centenario, the Confederations Cup, and at the moment they're bound for the World Cup. Yeah. So, you know, considering this generation of players, I mean, they're poor guys. I mean, I feel for Alexis and Arturo Vidal not having, you know, their summers off, particularly because they keep going all the way in these competitions. Yeah, so
it could be easy pickings late on, you think, for Ronaldo and André Silva and Bernardo Silva.
André Silva as well. André Silva. Silva and goal, this Portugal team. But, it's one of the reasons why this Chile side has looked a little heavy-legged so far in this tournament.
Right, okay. Of course, Nick Miller, you've just come back from Portugal, haven't you?
Went to Lisbon a few weeks ago. So
bingo.
Very nice.
Were they talking much about the game there?
No.
Right.
No.
I know what you'd like to talk about, and it brings it full circle, if you will. It's England's under-21s who are taking on Germany.
Yeah, I mean, they've done very well in this tournament, not been sort of overwhelmingly impressive, but do you think it would be almost sort of more beneficial if they didn't win this tournament, because they've got this kind of tournament experience? Winning these kind of youth tournaments doesn't necessarily mean success in sort of senior.
Losing them equally doesn't necessarily pave the way for.
Well, no, exactly. But if because in this country we're so obsessed with national team succeeding, if the under-21s team, as well as the under-20s and the team that won the Toulon tournament as well, there's going to be so much kind of expectation and pressure and put on these kids that to then go on and do something at a senior tournament that, I don't know, do they need that?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Have England ever won the under-21s?
Yes. Yeah, they won in the sort of early 80s or something.
1984, I think.
Right.
Yeah. And who
was in that team? Sinton. Andy Sinton's got to be in there. No?
They won the under-20s twice in the kind of early 90s as well.
Did they?
And, you know, that didn't ever come a thing.
Listener, a quick bit of research reveals that we're not familiar with pretty much any of that squad, except for a certain Mark Hatley, who did go on to achieve great things for Milan, amongst other people.
Steve Hodge as well. He went on
to
claim Maradona's shirt after 1986. So
there you go. Yeah.
He won something at a major tournament.
Yeah. as you say, winning that, it didn't necessarily serve as a prelude to greatness, although it wasn't long after that England were just a penalty kick away from a World Cup final. Different set of players.
Yeah, completely different set of players.
But I'm just saying. Anyway.
I think definitely, you know, if you go through the experience of joining a squad of players assembled from a variety of clubs, bonding together as a team, growing as a team through a tournament, and emerging from that tournament with positive memories, then should you become a senior player who gets selected for future tournaments, then that can only help.
That's the theory there, but I'm not sure it necessarily
works. Why would it not help?
Well, I'm not saying it doesn't. In theory, it doesn't help, but I'm not sure it has. There is an awful lot of evidence that success at youth tournaments naturally translates to success.
Okay.
In seniors, there have been examples like the Germany team that won the 21s a few years ago, and there were, you know, players like Xavi have won various youth tournaments with Spain, but it doesn't necessarily translate.
Has Frank de Boer been named as Crystal Palace's new boss yet?
Apparently he will be at 2 o'clock.
Today? Okay. I met him earlier this year, actually.
Uh-huh. This was post-Inter, yeah?
Post-Inter, yeah. He was obviously, I wouldn't say bitter, but he seemed slightly emotionally scarred by his experience with the Nerazzurri.
Not surprised. He said he was there for, what, 3 months, but it felt like a year.
Right.
Yeah, it was very intense.
But he's a man with a tremendous pedigree. And producer Ben suggests he's nicknamed Mr. Grumpy. He's not a man who's going to break out his smile to all and sundry, but it's there if you know how to tickle him the right way.
We were discussing in the office earlier on, is he among the most successful players to have managed in the Premier League. The other ones we come up with are sort of Ruud Gullit and Felix Magath. Carlo Ancelotti won the European Cup a couple of times.
Viali, I suppose.
Yeah, Ozzy Ardiles won the World Cup.
Yeah, Ancelotti, that's pretty impressive. Frank de Boer, he's had four straight trophies as a manager with Ajax. He, as a player, won seven league titles between Ajax and Barcelona, plus the UEFA Cup, the Champions League and the Cup Winners' Cup. So, yeah, strong candidate. Strong. I wonder how Maurizio Pellegrino would rank in that particular little competition. He's now been confirmed as the new manager at Southampton. How exciting is that, Simon?
Well, I think it's an intriguing appointment. Mm-hmm. He's obviously did pretty well with Alaves last season, took them to the Copa del Rey final, and to an impressive league position. I think they came about ninth.
That's correct.
He's experienced some downs as well as ups in his career. He's been sacked a couple of times. So it's not like he turns everything to gold. But he sounds like a genuinely interesting person, a person who approaches football and the people who he coaches in an intelligent and inquisitive and original way.
Have you read that nice Sid Lowe's
interview? Sid Lowe's done a good profile of him. So I think that I'm intrigued and optimistic.
Right. They have an interesting line in picking managers, don't they, Southampton?
They certainly have done very well recently. Even Puel, who was dumped after one season and therefore not considered a success, he achieved very decent results. And, yeah, there's been one hit after another. And the run kind of has to come to an end at some point, but, like I say, this is another good appointment. And another person who was on Crystal Palace's shortlist, and they kind of appear to have compiled a shortlist of candidates who they're interested in and then seen them all go to other teams instead.
All right, who else was that?
Well, Marco Silva.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Dyche was rumoured to be on it and hasn't budged from Burnley as of yet. And there was the guy who quit at Saint-Étienne last season.
Christophe Galtier.
Yeah. I'm not sure what he's obviously available still. I'm not sure where he's going to end up.
Okay.
Also, producer Ben passed me earlier intriguing video of Pellegrino dislocating his own shoulder.
Is that true?
Attempting to high-five him. Well, he appeared to be high-fiving himself. and he missed. Well, I mean, there wasn't really much to miss. He just swung his palm as if he was high-fiving someone, but there was no one there.
Right, and his arm just kept on going right out of the socket.
It just slipped right out.
Oof.
The man, I mean, he's got some interesting coaching ideas, but he is peculiarly weak-shouldered.
Right. The thing is, if you have dislocated your shoulder once, and he might have done it in a rather more kind of slightly more daring do fashion in the past, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
And it'll pop out at literally any time.
Are you speaking from experience?
No, I'm not. Because
that's what happens to me.
Really? Does it, like in the morning, it like just slips out?
Yeah, or like if I do what Mircea Pellegrino did, it sometimes does come a little bit unstuck like there. Or if you carry like a, even a very, like, you can never judge when it's going to go. Like even if you carry like a man bag like mine with very little in there, all of a sudden it can feel like...
Oh dear, does it really hurt when it does?
It just feels awkward.
Right.
You kind of get used to it.
We have an occasional Forgotten Stories series on the Guardian website where we bring up old footballing yarns. And I've been working one on a guy called Fred Spixley who played for Sheffield Wednesday and England at the turn of the last century. This story calls to mind a story in his life when he was coaching at Nuremberg as the First World War broke out and trying to get out of the country. He wasn't allowed out because he was a man of fighting age. He was 44 at the time, and under 45s weren't allowed to leave Germany. They were imprisoned. And he had to prove to a medic that he was not fit for fighting.
Right.
He had previously dislocated his knee, so he came up with a plan to pop it out again. In his examination.
And did it work?
And that's exactly what he did.
Jeez.
And he was allowed out of Germany and returned.
Well, ask, James, how did you originally do your shoulder?
Playing rugby.
Right, yeah. Okay. It wasn't like making a bed or anything, was it, like producer Ben?
No.
Okay.
No.
Producer Ben's finger's coming along quite nicely, just for listeners who wanted an update on that particular injury situation. Well, there you go. Simon, you've not done rumour mill this morning, have you?
I have not, no.
Okay, but am I right in saying, Nick, that you have milled the rumours?
Mm.
What did you get out?
Apparently, Arsenal and Manchester City are going to swap Alexis Sanchez and Sergio Aguero? Don't know. No idea. It's one of those kind of the stories that is player swap stories never actually happen. Mm. They just seem like a nice idea.
Did you hear this rumour, Nick?
It was, the Daily Star.
Right, okay. Yeah. So, okay, because I've seen a lot about Arsenal being in for that Anthony Martial.
Oh, I missed that one.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's kind of everywhere.
Is it?
Yeah, Arsenal for Anthony Martial if they can't get Kylian Mbappe. In the unlikely event that they don't stump up ridiculous millions for Mbappe, they will fall back on Anthony Martial, who I imagine would be desperate to get out from under that big cloud he's had at Old Trafford.
Well, I mean, I thought the big rumour was that they were going in for Lacazette, but...
Oh, yeah, but that's been mentioned as well, isn't it? That's a lovely... that would be a lovely addition to Arsenal's... Well, Arsenal. what else have you got? Lacazette says here would cost $57 million. That's not much, is it?
Well, I think Lacazette had a deal done with Atletico Madrid.
Ooh.
And then obviously their transfer ban happened. But I think Atleti are trying to restart it for January. So
right.
Just depends. I think Arsenal were in for Lacazette last year but refused to stump up the cash. Depends really how much they like him. Again, it could be... you'd hope it's not one of those summers where Arsenal don't sign an outfield player.
On the subject of Alexis Sanchez, last time I was kind of suggesting that there's no way he was moving. I quoted a tweet from Danny Welbeck saying that he would give everyone £10 or something. If Sanchez left, a lot of listeners pointing out that wasn't from Danny Welbeck. It was from a fake Danny Welbeck account. Who can you trust in this world of social media?
If you can't trust an anonymous person on the internet.
Exactly. What else was in the rumour mill today, Nick?
Manchester United are apparently interested in Nainggolan from Roma, which whenever I've seen him play, I've always liked him very much, but he... Yeah, seems relatively happy at Roma.
He loves Roma. He loves living there. Yeah. He's made his home in Italy, moved there very, very early. And, if he was going to go, you'd have thought it would be last summer when Conte was very, very big on Nainggolan. Apparently met him in Rome. But and you look at Roma now, they don't need the cash. They've just sold Mo Salah for going up to €50 million to Liverpool, and they're going to sell Kostas Manolas and Leandro Paredes to Zenit for...
Ooh,
$65 million. So I mean, together, so they're going to make $100 million this year from the transfer window, Roma. So they certainly don't need to be selling someone like Nainggolan.
Okay, now to me, in my uninformed, that would sound like terrific business from Roma's point of view. Gosh. Why is Roberto Mancini spending so much money on those two?
Well, I mean, they are two very good players, but I think they are replaceable. Certainly, Paredes is replaceable. They're going to bring Lorenzo Pellegrini back, who's had a very good European Championship for Italy, scored that great bicycle kick in their first game. Roma always seem to do very well at cashing in on centre-backs. You'd also say it's one of the reasons why that lack of defensive continuity at the start of the season is one of the things that holds them back in a title race. But I think they're two good signings, and Mancini always persuades his owners, wherever he is, to spend big.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Disco Busquets writes in, he says, I have a question about the sniff and pause that seems to be so prevalent these days. Do you know what Disco Busquets is talking about?
The sniff and pause.
Yeah, he says, did Jamie Carragher start that and everyone followed suit, or was Jamie Carragher the first that I noticed doing it and everyone else had been doing it all along? It's more of a desperate exhale followed by a sniff and a pause. Not going to name any names, but I've been noticing it a lot lately. I'm not sure if I could do it. Can you do it, James?
No.
Okay. We don't have an answer for you, Disco Busquets. I think I know what you're talking about.
It could be a hay fever thing this
it
time.
It might be,
you know?
Yeah. Username says, Andy Gray was the king of the random noise pause answer.
Huh.
Who's your favourite commentator, Nick? Well, there it is.
There you go. I was just demonstrating it for you.
Yeah. Okay. We had a big chat last week. Sorry, missed it, on Love Island. Do you watch that?
No, I haven't seen any of it.
Anybody following that? Because Barry was across it for us, and he's not here today, so I don't know what's happening.
Is he watching it? Is he binging on it?
He probably is. Johnny Five Eyes says, hey, your celebrity Love Island chat, wasn't Lee Sharp on that? Benjamin Jenkins agrees. Lee Sharp hooked up with Abby Titmus. Come on, fellas, says Benjamin Jenkins. All right, and Michael Chilcott. Ah, this is a proper question. Thanks, Michael.
A Chilcot inquiry.
Yes. Let's hope it doesn't end. Yeah. Appleton appointed, Michael Appleton, yeah, appointed as Leicester's number two, having previously been the head honcho at Oxford United. Do you think this is a strange move? Do you, Nick?
Well, I mean, the last guy who was Leicester assistant manager is now the Leicester manager, so there's there's a career path there. So it doesn't seem that sort of outlandish.
No, okay. I have a feeling that he's good news, Michael Appleton, but I haven't really been following. I remember him at Portsmouth.
Well, he got a series of jobs based on a reputation as being a kind of the next great hope of English coaching, and those jobs didn't go so well. He was at Blackburn, one of the series of fairly calamitous appointments Blackburn made. But he's done well at Oxford. So who knows? Maybe he just needs a little bit more time to mature.
Perhaps. Simon, what are you reading there?
Oh, I was just looking at the draw for the Europa League first qualifying round.
Oh, good Lord. Is that coming up soon?
It's being played on Thursday.
What, you're kidding? This week?
Thursday of this week.
So this Thursday, there's Europa League preliminary games.
Yeah.
Which fixtures caught your eye in particular? And we'll finish off with that, shall we?
Well, I've just highlighted the games involving British teams.
Mm.
Rangers, I guess, are the biggest name entering at this early stage of proceedings, are playing Progress Niederkorn from Luxembourg.
Mm.
Mighty Land of Denmark. Mighty Land's not the proper way of pronouncing it, but I prefer it to the official one.
You mean Midtjylland?
And so I'm, yes, I do. Oh,
okay.
But I prefer Mighty Land, I'm going with it.
Is that what it means in Danish?
I have no idea.
Oh,
but it almost says Mighty Land, and that's close enough for me.
All right, Simon.
Anyway, they're playing Derry City.
Well, what a hugely informative and entertaining edition of Football Weekly this has proved to be. I can only thank you, Simon Burton, for making that happen. James Horncastle, Nick Miller as well, and producer Ben. We have a show coming up on Friday in which we'll be previewing the finals of the Under-21 European Championship and the Confederations Cup. So do make sure that you make time to be with us then. In the meanwhile, have a super week, everybody. We'll catch you soon.
The Guardian.